Hi, we're Visible, the wireless company with nothing to hide. Get unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for $25 a month, taxes and fees included. Sorry, hidden fees. We're just not into you. Switch today at Visible.com. Rate with service on the Visible plan. For additional terms and network management practices, see Visible.com.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. If you're a small business owner, you know that it isn't just your business. It's your life. And whatever your business might be, you want someone who understands. That's why you might want to check out State Farm Small Business Insurance. Why? Because State Farm agents are small business owners too, living and working in your community. That means they know what it takes to help you personalize your policies for your small business needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
Hi, everyone. This is Pivot from the Vox Media Podcast Network. I'm Kara Swisher, back from Hawaii and now in frigid Washington, D.C.
And I'm Scott Galloway, here to publicly disclose for the first time that I am in a relationship with Jeff Bezos. It could happen, Kara.
Hey, alive girl.
It could happen. By the way, I don't know what it means, but I think I've been upgraded to the next level of Prime membership because I just got a picture of someone's junk.
Oh, you know what? Scott, as usual, you take a very delicate situation and make it horrible.
Well,
you're in Paris. I'm only going to give you time off because you're in Paris right now. Is that
I'm
correct?
So jet lagged. Yeah, I am in. I'm in a basement somewhere in the city of lights. But by the way, just back to the whole Bezos.
We're
going
to get Bezos.
We're going to get to Bezos. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm so excited about that. I can't hold back. I'm so ready. What have you heard? What's going on here?
He's not a very good texter, right? Let's just be clear about that. Although I'm going to get to that in a second.
Okay.
I think, you know, I used to know them very well, and I haven't spent a lot of time with them since they both become zillionaires, or any time. But in the early days, I did. I spent a lot of time with them. And Mackenzie Bezos is a wonderful and smart and very integral part of the beginning of Amazon, as I recall. And she also, I don't see that she will be, this will be a very different, I'd be surprised if it burst out into a horrible fight. It's not her nature and it's not his nature either. They seem to have gotten ahead of it. It looks like they just were married and then he met someone else or I'm not really, you know, I don't want to go into the
sure.
who did what to whom, because I think marriages are complicated and we really don't know what happened.
Yep.
But I think the focus for me is that I don't think it'll affect the business. I think the issues, I think probably anyone who's an investor is the focus. Like where he needs his focus, where is his focus and stuff like that. And so anytime you have personal issues and he's got four kids and obviously a new relationship, there's going to be questions about where his focus is. And I think the same thing happened with Sergey Brin at Google, although he was not nearly, in fact, not at all a part of the critical management staff at Google. But, you know, you see this happen to VCs, to CEOs and things like that. And I think the only thing business people think is, where's the focus? How will it affect the stock? I don't think it will affect the stock at all or anything else. So that's how I come down.
Yeah,
Where are you, Scott?
It appears they have mutual shared interest in that they don't want, they're both large shareholders of a company. They don't want this to spill out into the public. I thought the press release was awfully strange, or the thing that he posted on his Facebook page.
Well, he did that to get ahead of the, you know, the National Enquirer.
The Enquirer story. Right? But it was so, you kind of knew something was up because, I don't know, I'm sure you read it, but there was a sense in there saying, we look forward to new ventures and adventures together. And I thought, that describes divorce perfectly. You know, that it's not.
They probably own a lot of stuff together. I'm guessing they do. They probably have a lot of it.
I know, but it's like.
Sergey Brin and Wojcicki do. They own like half a town and they have investments all over the place. You have to stay. And they have children, obviously, besides, which is the best investment. But I think, yeah, I know it was odd. I think they were just rushing. I think that was a rush job. You know what I mean? Like, what are we going to do? What I found fascinating is that he didn't imagine that he was going to be the subject of scrutiny by Trump affiliated people, especially with the Washington Post ownership and sort of shocked. I think they were probably a little caught like, oh, they're following us. He's not the subject of interest. And the fact that a man who puts echoes in everybody's home and, you know, and listening devices in everyone's home doesn't realize he could be, you know, easily hacked in some way.
Yeah, so. And it just goes to show, everyone, everyone's human, right? And I don't want to make excuses for the guy, but I think we all sort of assume that Bezos was kind of the least human, and that is he seems somewhat infallible. The frame, the picture, it just all was pretty perfect.
Yeah, very much so.
And you know, it's easy to be glib about it, and then you think about, well, they have four kids, and I know you've been through it, I've been through it, but that press release, they made it sound like their divorce wasn't a tragedy and a breakup of a family, but they were going on a Disney cruise to the Bahamas. The whole thing just sounded...
When Gwyneth Paltrow started doing them, remember?
Conscious uncoupling?
Conscious uncoupling, whatever the hell that was. Yeah, you know, ups and downs. But what was another thing that was interesting was the focus on the text and how it became a Twitter meme, obviously. It was kind of crazy. And it was interesting. I ran into someone yesterday who said, I wish I could text like that. Like, that I was in love so much that I texted like that. Even though it was super awkward, the hey... Alive girl, whatever that meant, and things like that.
I think he's sexy. I think he's romantic.
I thought it was
vulnerable.
Very sweet. It was
very nice. I mean, I think he's dreamy.
Really, someone was like, if I was the world's richest man, I would be like, have like 93 supermodel girlfriends. And it was interesting. It was very sweet. I thought it was very sweet.
Yeah.
So there you have it.
Well,
best
of luck to all of them.
Love is a constantly churning something.
There you go, Kara. There you go.
But you're right. He becomes human. He becomes more human, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
Also, I'm curious on your take. My sense is that the media has actually shown a great deal of restraint and is being pretty, I don't know, old school about this and not...
Yeah. What are you going to do? What are you going to do?
Oh, my gosh. Well,
I mean, it's not like Harvey. It's not like, you know, it's just, you know... it's so not, given how all the much revelations this year, I mean, including at Amazon with its own executives, you know, Roy Price and the whole thing like that. That's like, that's different. That's malevolent. This is just human beings' relationships,
this
right?
This is just midlife crisis.
Yeah, or something. You know, the bulking up might have been a sign, I suppose. But well, it's just, or the, I don't know. I just think it's, I think as a reporter, you're like, oh, we had, let me very briefly tell you, when we were covering what happened with Sergey Brin, I was very, when they called to talk, they essentially told us what was going on. And when I, at first I was like, no, thank you. We're not writing about this because it's not our area, people breaking up. And the only thing of interest was the stock, right? That there was, he had a certain amount of stock that was controlling shareholder stock. And so that was of interest. And then the second shoe dropped is that he was seeing someone who had, literally I had just been seen with another executive at Google who was going out with another executive at Google. So, and that guy left, Hugo Bera, who's now at Facebook. And it was at that one, that then it was like, oh great, this is like invade, it's a whole workplace thing. And so then we did write about it. But it was definitely, it was hard to do. We felt we had to think about what was important. And in that case, a major executive who was running its Android division left because of this romance drama that was going on at Google. And then there were issues of things in the workplace. This guy was, you know what I mean, stuff like that. But that was more after the Hugo thing happened. I think that was, it became pertinent. It became much more pertinent. So, yeah, don't love writing these. I tell you, I don't really care what people do. Unless it affects their business. But yeah, you're right. People are very prim and proper and stuff about it. And you know, people don't like to judge. People try not, I mean, even though the press seems super judgy, they don't like to judge. But speaking of judging, tell us your virtue signaling thing turned out to be, here we have a big thing this week.
Yeah, we talked about this, Kara, before you went to Kauai. By the way, how was Hawaii?
It was beautiful.
Was it nice?
Really lovely. Oh, it was beautiful. There's some flooding in Honolulu where I was, and it was beautiful. It's gorgeous. I love Hawaii. It's one of my favorite places on earth. I did a lot of hiking, some stand-up paddle boarding. I don't swim. I don't like to swim, but I even went into the ocean and did some boogie bar, whatever they're called.
Boogie boarding.
It was great. And the food was great. And the pineapples, obviously, were delicious. So it was great.
Good for you. I enjoyed your podcast with John Lovett.
Yeah, I did like it.
Although I'm a little bit jealous.
Were you jealous?
For listeners who didn't catch it, let me just summarize it. So you would say, John, who is the Democratic nominee going to be? And he would say something like, well, I really don't know. I'm not in the business of predictions. And you would go, oh my God, you're so thoughtful. Can I rub your feet? I mean, I thought you guys were going to start making out.
No, we're
that
no
was
gay.
Ridiculous. We're, that was totally
on.
Ridiculous.
Not that there's anything wrong with two gay people getting together, but
oh my gosh, I'd never even
oh,
heard
come
of
on.
The guy.
That. His Bird Box rant was fantastic. Come
nah,
on,
it was very good. Book. I admit it.
It was good.
It was
oh,
nice.
You're just jealous. You're
a little
just
bit.
Jealous.
A little
but let's
bit.
Let's get to virtue signaling. You know I'm giving you a,
well,
a compliment
on,
no, here.
Kara.
I'm trying
other
to
than,
give you a compliment.
Other than success, other than success, looks, and intelligence, that guy has nothing on me. He
yeah,
has
right.
nothing on me. Okay,
yeah,
virtue signaling.
Yeah.
So we talked
you know,
about.
Yes, okay. Yeah, all right,
we're going to see. We made a prediction that 19, we're going to see a lot of virtue signaling or a lot of woke as a business strategy.
So explain what that means for the people who don't understand virtue signaling.
Sure. So 70% of our elected officials in the Senate, at least, are represent 30% of the population. That a lot of red uh-huh. states don't have a big population. So politically, conservative values are overrepresented. But economically, mm-hmm. Kind of progressives are capturing the majority of the income. So there's a very smart, if you just do the math, there's a solid shareholder-driven business strategy in promoting and being very open about your progressive values. Because the bottom line is that audience is the one that's captured the majority of the income gains over the last 10 years. So you see dicks banning assault rifles. You see, what's the big one? Gosh, I'm missing. Oh, Nike, the big one with Colin Kaepernick. And then most recently, just a few, 2 days ago, literally, the Gillette ad.
Bullying.
The Me Too movement against
toxic
sexual harassment.
Masculinity.
Is this the best a man can get?
Yeah.
You know, the best. Basically saying, you know, really calling out men on some of these issues. Mm-hmm. And I'm kidding. Have you seen the ad?
Sexual harassment is taking over.
It's been going on far too long. We can't laugh it off.
Who's the daddy?
What I actually think she's trying to say.
Making the same old excuses.
Yes, I love it. I made my sons watch it. One of them, who is seems to argued with me about it, saying it was man bashing, and the other loved it. My older son loved it. I thought it was great. I actually watched it again because I wanted to. Because when I had this debate with my son, I was like, it actually wasn't. It said, "We believe men are great." They did say it several times. I think people only saw the guys on the. The barbecue saying boys will be boys, that part.
Yeah, yeah.
But every depiction of the good men, you know what it was? It was bad men bashing. It certainly mm-hmm. was that. And that's okay. I'm good with that. And I think most men should be good with that. Or all men should be good with bad men bashing. But I think most of the men depicted were good. Like the guy who was talking to his daughter, or the guy who rescued the kid from the bully in front of his son, or the father who pulled the two people apart. There's so, every example is a man doing something laudable. In the thing. I loved it. I know it was manipulative to sell. I know it's to sell to women. Women loved it, which was fascinating. When I tweeted about it, I said, I know this is marketing, and I know that I'm being manipulated, but it's not since, you know, the Kodak commercial, which is the Paul Anka song, Good Morning Yesterday. You remember that song?
Yep.
The Time of Your Life. Or I had not been so moved by an ad. So
wow. That's,
yeah.
That's,
I have sons. I think about it a lot.
Yeah, it's you know. It's caused a ton of controversy, and I would
well,
say
it
that,
has it caused a ton of crime because like there was a
yeah,
good story in the Daily Beast that showed the people that were saying there was controversy had like 4 followers and linked to things. Like I have a feeling it's not. I think it's just a couple of loud bad men on Twitter, essentially. Versus, but then my son had the reaction, so I can see. What did you think? Were you like insulted as a man?
I was conflicted by it because I think that I think the dialogue is an important one. I like P&G. Mm-hmm. I love it when companies take risks like this. I think it shows a willingness to move outside their comfort zone. It wasn't a safe thing to run. So I think it's, you know, hats off to them. I didn't like the execution on it.
Because why?
It felt a little, I don't know, a little hitting you over the head with it. I felt it was a little passe. And I worry that. I don't worry that, but in every, it feels like white heterosexual men have become the generally accepted oppressors in our society. And I wonder if that's.
Which is factually
which
true.
Which you think is accurate?
Okay. And they feel bad when we point it out now. See, people are pointing it out now, and they, I feel bad. things. I'm sorry. It's always the people with the gun to the head of society that say they're the victims. But go ahead. Sorry,
yeah. I'm not sure, though. I'm not sure. What do you think it does? So in terms of moving the debate forward, what you think the progress is that your sons see it and it educates them? You think that
I think it was interesting that one thought it was great and he understood he was being manipulated. He also was like, yeah, it was one of those manipulative ads, but he liked it. He liked the messaging in it and he thought it was good. He was well done. And my other son was wary of it. Like, why are they picking on men? Why are they doing this? And I said, I want him to watch it again, because when I watched it again, I actually thought, no, they really aren't. They are, but it's how you see something. But I do like that Gillette is doing it. Like, I love ads like this. You know, they engage you. They make you feel something and they make you talk about something. So I had this amazing debate and discussion with my son about it. So in that way, it was great. And I don't know if it was quite as gorgeous as Nike's Colin Kaepernick ad, but, you know, it wasn't as beautifully wrought as that one, but it was pretty good. It was, I don't know. I'm not an ad person. That's more your area.
It's spilling over though into tech. So Satya Nadella announces that they're going to allocate $500 million to try and help with housing affordability and donate a bunch of money to homeless causes in the Seattle area. And again, we have another company kind of, I think, pressing on the soft tissue of Amazon, who fought the tax in Seattle such that was going to help fund some low-income housing. But these guys, essentially, they're kind of pulling out. They're battling with their conscience. You know, they're saying, we're the good guys.
There was the Facebook with the $300 million. I didn't think that was very much money at all, actually. I was like,
you weren't impressed
by
that.
I like $500 million Microsoft, but I'd like a billion. Like, I want everyone to start with a billion, and then we can go up from there. That's my feeling. I think it's great that Satya did this. I think it's, I'm not sure what I think of the Facebook thing yet, because I'm sure what they're up to. And it seems like there's a lot, it's very hooky into Facebook.
Yeah.
But I would like them, you know, I have an expression, you're so poor, all you have is money. I think it's a, we'll talk later about the column I wrote about Alexandria Ocasio, but she's managed to get people to start talking about this issue of the really rich people grabbing for everything, that I think is really catching fire. And I think in a way she's doing it in exactly the right way.
Speaking of really rich people. Right. So I'm headed to the conference. I think we're actually, you and I met, I'm headed to DLD in Munich and I'm,
You're going to Davos after that?
No, I haven't been invited to Davos since I was 30. I peaked when I was very young, and invited when I was 29, 30, and 31, and I haven't been invited back since.
I hate that place. It's rich people licking each other up and down. That's in the frigid cold weather. But go ahead.
Or I like the analogy when your guest said that it's a fire safety convention that just invites a bunch of arsonists. Hey, everybody, let's to solve the world's problems, let's get all the people who have fucked it up together in one place in the mountains.
It's funny.
But anyway, so I'm doing the keynote on Monday. I recognize I'm boasting. And you know who's doing it on Sunday?
Who?
It's Sheryl Sandberg.
Oh, will you sit in the front row for me and videotape that, please?
And the theme of the conference is optimism and courage. So I'm titling my talk, Pessimism and Cowardice. What do you think?
I love it. Oh, good, good.
Yeah.
I need you to go to the Sheryl Sandberg. I want to hear about it. I want your thoughts. I want to talk about it next week. All right. You have to do that. It'll be interesting. She's been getting out a lot more. I've been hearing she was at CES, I think. And so it's interesting. But before we finish this section, William Barr, you wanted to talk about it because of the whole Mueller thing, because he talked about that a lot and he was trying to seem like he wasn't crazy. That seemed to be, I am not crazy and I will be strong. Yeah. Kind of thing, although who knows with these people. But talk about why you think this is important.
Well, we thought that, so everyone was sort of expecting a lot of questions around protecting Mueller. Mm-hmm. And he essentially said, I think this investigation should come to its, you know, should be protected and should kind of go where it goes. So the thing that came out of it that was sort of unexpected was that three senators, Republican senators, all brought up the issue and asked for his viewpoint on whether tech had gotten too big and that the concentration of power was detrimental to competition and privacy. And his viewpoint was clearly that this is something that warrants additional scrutiny, most likely from the FTC. And everyone's been talking about the DOJ. And the FTC, in some ways, for reasons I don't entirely understand, might have more teeth around doing something here expeditiously. So just going back to another prediction, in addition to kind of woke as a business strategy, we talked about that 2019 might actually be the year that the breakup of big tech happens. And it looks like the Attorney General is kind of on board with that. And this might be a rare bipartisan issue because—
Let's listen to newbie Senator Josh Hawley from Missouri. He is the former AG of Missouri, and he beat out Claire McCaskill.
Let me ask you more broadly about the question of antitrust and mergers. And you gestured towards this earlier in your testimony. I'm increasingly worried that the department is not enforcing vigorously the antitrust statutes in many sectors of the economy, not just technology. We see, again, as you've alluded to, we see growing concentration of power in various sectors held by just a few firms. And if you look at recent trends in the department's scrutiny of proposed mergers, it's at record lows. Last year, for instance, the Department of Justice Antitrust Division scrutinized mergers through second requests for information in less than 1% of all eligible cases. That is, I believe, the lowest level of merger scrutiny recorded since the FTC started tracking those statistics back in 1981. And just for comparison purposes, in 1981, that review was five times higher than it was in 2018. My question is, do you think that this record low level of merger scrutiny is appropriate? And if you're confirmed as Attorney General, what might you do to ensure that the antitrust division faithfully and vigorously enforces the law?
Well, I am for vigorous enforcement of the antitrust laws to preserve competition. And as I said, this is going to be an area I'm going to want to get into.
Okay, what he's saying, that he's going to push very hard on this. This was one of his topics for sure. And you think the AG will be with them, and Democrats too. Democrats for sure. You know, you have Cory Booker and others sort of interested in this.
Yeah, they're angry for different reasons. So the Democrats believe that, you know, these guys basically were helped manipulate the elections to an outcome they didn't like in 16. And but I've always felt that actually the people who are really going to go against her on big tech are these red state senators who have seen their few ad agencies, their corner store, their newspapers, their media companies have really gotten
hollowed
hurt.
If
you think about this, these companies have been incredible vessels of the transfer of wealth from the rest of the world to the U.S. and then from the middle of the U.S. to the coasts. So Kansas and Mississippi and Iowa, you know, big tech hasn't done much for them. I mean, granted, they can do their searches in 0.055 seconds, but in terms of actual economic growth and what it's done for the state and employment and the tax base, it's probably net-net a negative.
Yeah, although really, is that their job? They should think of something. I'm sorry, that's not really their job.
You think so?
Yeah, like think of, you take Kansas, figure it out yourself. Like, come on, can do, right? Can do Kansas or whatever. Or Oklahoma, okay. Oklahoma, okay. Okay, Oklahoma, make something.
Can do Kansas.
Okay. Now I'll get all these messages from Kansas. And I don't care. Make something. If you want to, don't stop complaining. Make something. Anyway, we're going to take a short break. When we get back, talk wins and fails and hamburgers.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You've heard it before. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. But it's more than just a tagline. Because State Farm agents are small business owners themselves who live and work in your community. And if you're in the market for small business insurance, who better to work with than an agent who understands what it takes? State Farm agents can help you create a personalized insurance plan that fits your small business needs and budget. Talk to your local State Farm agent today about small business insurance. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Support for this podcast comes from Constant Contact. If you're a business owner, you already know that it's really, really hard to cut through the noise of everyday life. If you want to connect with your customers, you need to break through the noise. You need Constant Contact. Constant Contact is a marketing platform that makes it easy to reach new audiences, grow your customer list, and connect over email, text, social media, and more. Whether you're a marketing guru or just learning the ropes, Constant Contact offers writing assistance tools and automation features that make it simple to say the right thing at the right time. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
back to our show, hamburgers. There's so many things to talk about. I'm gonna give there's so many fails. There's hamburgers, which was the Trump thing he tweeted. It's the new shutdown cuisine. There's the shutdown. There's Iowa Representative Stephen King for being the horrible racist that took so long to be chastised for this. And he's the one also in one of the hearings he did with Sundar Pichai. He didn't know who makes the iPhone. But I think I'm going to do a win this week. I'm going to do Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez, who gets a lot of attention, obviously. But I wrote a column about how she's really extremely online. I said she was extremely online, and she is really creating, controlling, and pushing forward narratives that she's interested in, including pay inequity and income inequity, and all kinds of things. And she manages to shut down her critics, the right wing. They just they cannot stop her. And she's it's a really interesting way. She actually's never aggrieved. She's just very funny and very strong minded and also serious. And one of my favorites was when from her own side of the aisle, Joe Lieberman, who's sort of a conservative senator, but he said she wasn't the future. This is I don't know how old he is, but he's been around the block for lots of blocks for many years. And he said she wasn't the future of the Democratic Party. And she tweeted back at him. She tweeted back at the story. And she goes, new Congress, who dis?
Yeah, she's outstanding. What is it about her Twitter?
Thoughts?
I heard she was giving lessons to her colleagues on how to use Twitter.
You can't give lessons in this. You know, I compared her to Trump. Trump is very effective. But
and she's unafraid. She's not interested in party hierarchy. You can tell. You can imagine Pelosi and Schumer or whoever it is sit her down and say, or Standing Horror say, this is how we get things done. Your time will come. Play ball. And she's just not having any of it.
No, but everybody is talking about income. And by the way, they agree with her. And the way she's explaining it, she's doing something. It is like, you know, Kennedy in television.
TV,
do you look at that? Like, she knows how to, there's something different in how she's using it compared to everybody else, I think.
Well, typically these seminal leaders have always figured out a way to master a new medium. And, you know, unfortunately, some very damaging leaders in the middle of the 20th century were really good with radio. But, you know, Kennedy and TV, we talked about this. Some people have mastered the in-person medium, but she is definitely somebody who's kind of on a rocket ship. I mean, what does she care? She's 29?
Yeah.
So
and she also messes up in a really good way. It's a really interesting, I think, you know, everyone's sort of waiting for the fall, like this is going to fall, but I don't know. I find the Twitter performance is so flawless. It's like she lands it with a 10. She sticks it.
Yeah.
I think.
She's fantastic. It's going to be very, and you're watching the next 6 months.
My kid loves her, who's voting in the next election. He was like, she's amazing. He's never been excited about a politician, trust me. Although I do think Nancy Pelosi is doing great, too.
Is this the one that likes the Gillette ad or the one that thought?
Yes, the one who likes the Gillette ad. But he also, you know, but Nancy Pelosi's also not doing bad herself. All her sides and then not disinviting him and stuff. I think she's doing a good job too. The ladies are in charge. Scott, what are your wins and fails?
So actually, I agree with you. I think Pelosi has really kind of, I don't know, reinvigorated or burnished her reputation as a real leader. I think she comes out of this looking good. I think the Democratic Party, you know, we're great at sort of snatching defeat from the jaws of victory, and it feels as if around the shutdown that it has squarely landed on the president's desk. And as much as you hate to see it, what's going on, I do think that it's every day, I just think it gets a little bit worse for the president and the Republicans.
Oh,
and I
thought, Giuliani. What happened with Giuliani? Maybe there was collusion. All right, maybe a little collusion off to the
tiny
left.
Tiny bit. There was collusion. There was collusion. Like
you know how that mold is, that collusion is. It just gets in and you just can't get it out. It's
What was he said? He said, I never said the campaign didn't collude.
But they did. Like, it's just astounding. They don't think we, like, have tape. It's just the weirdest thing. It's anyway, what else do you think is a win or a fail?
So I'm trying to think. What else did we have? Predictions.
The government shutdown, everything.
There's a lot going on. I'm trying to bring this back to big tech. I don't know if you saw. I think that, and this is both a
Snapchat,
lose and a prediction for 2019. It ends up that the CEO of WeWork has investment interests in properties that they've been leasing, or that WeWork has been leasing from. And I'm as long as it was disclosed and his investors knew about it, it's fine. But my prediction is 19 is going to be a very bad year for WeWork.
Oh, interesting.
And if you saw what happened with the limiteds of SoftBank, including some of the Middle Eastern sovereign funds who actually stepped in and blocked this massive investment that SoftBank was about to make in WeWork, when your limited partners step in and actually block an investment, say to the general partnership, the guys allocating the capital, no, we're not comfortable with this, that is pretty extraordinary. You don't see that a lot. And if you look at the economics of WeWork, valuation of $48 billion, and yet Regis, kind of a similar but lamer potted plants, bad cherry wood version of WeWork, has twice as many desks, but trades at 1/16th the value. And while WeWork's created a great brand and incredible culture.
That's because they don't have kombucha on tap.
Yeah, they don't have pale ale.
No, pale ale or whatever.
But it's if you look at WeWork is now by a lot of analyses, if the floor they own in a large building is technically worth more than the building itself that it leases that floor from.
Yeah.
And it's hard to see what kind of network effects
that's
or
not
technology.
Too good to be.
Yeah, it just doesn't. I think WeWork is going to be in the news for all the wrong reasons in 2019.
All right. Okay. What about Snap? Given the changes. I was in the Snapchat. I was at Snapchat two nights ago.
Do you know the CFO there? Do you have any backstory there?
I do not. I do need to find out. They did add some really good people. Also like Julie Henderson from Fox, who I have great regard for. It's I don't know. I'm not clear what's going on. They're definitely having a hard time competing with what was a very innovative product. And again, my kid still uses it, and both of them do. But it's just hard. I think it's a really hard go. And this management, the inability of Evan to keep this management team together is something you definitely have to look at.
So this is a broader topic, but I want to talk a little bit about isms, right? So whenever there's a movement or there's a polemic that we discuss in our society, I oftentimes think it's too late. So in the 70s and 80s, we talked a lot about how people of color, specifically African Americans, had a much more difficult time in the workplace. And that was a worthwhile discussion, but I always felt, as the son of a single mother, who could either be a travel agent or a secretary. That was literally the choices for a woman in the 70s. That it was really that the cohort that was most discriminated against was, in fact, women. And since then, women with college educations have actually closed the gap. It's women with children that are still having a tough time in the workplace, that the corporate America just hasn't figured out a role for them. But I would argue the next cohort that's going to get more attention, and what actually doesn't get enough attention now, is ageism, especially in tech. And I think it's going to become a big issue in 2019. I think if you walk into a conference room or a meeting at a technology firm and you're over the age of 45 and you're not a billionaire, you're kind of seen as a loser. And I think there's a pretty big...
That's richism, but go ahead.
Well, you know what I'm saying. I think that if you haven't really killed it by the time you're 40 or 45 in tech, I think there's an inherent assumption that you're just not very good at what you do. And I think these cultures are pretty ageist. And I think that's going to start getting more attention.
There's lawsuits. There's been lawsuits and things like that. You know, someone who talks about this a lot is Dan Lyons, who has a new book out. He did it in his last book, talking about ageism and things like that. But I agree. It's a really interesting issue. Being a really old person, although I don't suffer from that because I'm better than they are. But it's true,
That was easy.
Come on, it's not even hard.
But tying this back to Evan and even Mark Zuckerberg, I think something else that's going to get a lot of scrutiny is that these two-class shareholder stocks, these two-class shareholder stocks protect these managers. So I believe the reason Sheryl Sandberg hasn't been fired is because they can't fire, they don't think they can fire Mark Zuckerberg because of this two-class shareholder system. Snap has the same two-class shareholder system. You have a young man who's already a billionaire, And if it wasn't a two-class shareholder company, I think they probably would have done something. I think they probably would have sold by now. And this is the problem with two-class shareholder stocks is right now he doesn't really need to be a fiduciary for other shareholders. He's banked his $1 billion. He's off to the races. He thinks he has a viewpoint or a vision, which he has been totally unable to articulate what it is exactly they're going to do here. Mm-hmm. You know, the redesign didn't work. They're getting killed.
Well, he had a very good vision initially, right? It's a really fresh vision. Everyone stole it.
It's a great company.
And I find, I have to say, of a lot of the people I talk to, I really enjoy talking to him because I always have a really, visionary is a good word. He actually, you're always like, oh, I didn't thought of it that way. But you're right. It's the execution. Vision can only get you so far. And so that's what he really has the issues with around PR. Not just every part of it is problematic, has been problematic for them.
But the CFO leaving, it kind of punctures another prediction we had a few months ago, where I thought that Amazon was a likely acquirer because the CFO was a 20-year veteran of Amazon.
Yeah.
And the fact that someone who was at Amazon for 20 years, you could hardly describe this person as a flake or someone who just kind of goes off half-cocked, leaves Snap after 6 months, is a very negative forward-looking indicator. Because this is the individual. I always see the CFO in any company as the source of truth. If I'm ever in a board meeting and I hear talk and I don't know what's going on, I sequester the CFO for 10 minutes. I'm like, okay, what's going on here?
And they
basically... You know, they take the entire board meeting and they put Wonder Woman's golden lasso on it and they say, this is the truth. This is what's going on. And when the person who knows the truth, after 6 months at Snap, eight months. I think that's more, you know, kind of trouble in Mudville. Yeah,
definitely. I will look into it. If you will go see Sheryl Sandberg in Germany, in Munich, I will go find out about this.
You know what I'm doing before that, Kara?
You're in Paris. Don't.
Okay, I'm in Paris. Hold on. No, this is
going to have snails on the Seine. What?
This is the worst flex in the world. I'm meeting a buddy of mine, and we decided to go to Vienna, and we're seeing those dancing horses. So this is how old and pathetic I am. Yeah, the Lippensaugs.
Yeah, whatever.
Dancing horses.
Sogs.
Lippensides.
Lippensomething.
Lippensomething. 10 years ago, last time we got together, he and I went to Stockholm. We went to some rave, and I tried experimental drugs.
Now we go see dancing horses.
We might as well go to Denny's and get the Grand Slam special and
Aren't they
home
like the river dance of Austria? Isn't that
we need to sterilize our catheters.
Isn't that like
and
going
go
to like Guy Fieri's Broadway, whatever? That's you're going to see horses dance? All right.
We're going to see horses dance. I don't know how we ended up there. How did I get so old?
God.
How did I get so old, Kara?
I'd go looking for alt-right people in Austria. they're all over the place again. Family von Trapp. The Von Trapp family singers. The family von Trapp. Remember that scene?
Wow. You sound very relaxed. You sound very chill.
Hakuna Matata, baby, or whatever. What is
nice.
I was in the town Lilo and Stitch was set in. Lovely. Hana Pipi or something like that. It was great. It was lovely.
Yeah. Good for you.
Yeah. Anyway, well, I'm here in D.C. for a long, long time for the freezing cold weather for the next couple of weeks. So we'll be talking from here. So I will go around and see how badly the government is shut down. I'm going to see a senator very soon. I'm going to get on the metro right now and go visit Senator Michael Bennett from Colorado.
I love Senator Bennett.
Do you?
Just yeah. Close, I met with him. I can finally flex back. I met with Senator Bennett about 6 weeks ago to talk about antitrust.
Well, good.
And you know what he asked me?
What?
He said to me, give me 10 ideas to restore the middle class.
Oh, all right.
He's like, give me 10 ideas to restore the middle class. This guy.
All right.
Talk about the kind of guy you want as an elected official. You know what he did before? He was the superintendent of schools.
Well, I am so excited. He reached out to me and said, can we meet? So he's making the rounds, I guess, of smart people.
He's a very decent man. Yeah. I was really,
all right.
I walked
I'm
away.
Excited.
Yeah,
I'm excited. I'm meeting all the politicians. I'm going to do that in the next few weeks. I'm going to meet all the politicians. And then this afternoon, I'm going to be doing a podcast with the CEO of Land O'Lakes, Beth Ford. She's a lesbian, very open. And she's running this thing. And they were the first companies to push back on King. And take away his money and stuff. And so we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the technology beyond agriculture technology. It should be interesting. There's all kinds. And we're reaching out to the real people, Scott, aren't we?
We're keeping it real.
We're keeping it real in Paris and D.C.
Yeah.
All right. Enjoy Paris, the City of Lights.
Thanks very much, Kara.
My favorite places. Next week, we'll talk about all kinds of things. I will need some stories from there and stuff that was talked to at DLD and stuff like that. I'm excited to hear what went on there and what the big topics were. Anyway, enjoy yourself. Rebecca Sinanis produces this show. Nishat Kurwa is Vox Media's executive producer of audio. Thanks also to Eric Johnson. Thanks for listening to Pivot from Vox Media. We'll be back next week for more of a breakdown of all things tech and business. And welcome back, Scott. I did not leave you for John Lovett. It was just a short affair. And I know you saw someone, too. If you like what you've heard, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening.